We're getting closer and closer to the real games, and will there be anyone left by the time that the real games come around? So many guys suspended under the league's performance-enhancing drug policy. The latest Cowboys defensive back, Orlando Scandrick, and this is an announcement that came from Cowboys owner Jerry Jones. It should have come from the league. I don't know that it's going to result in any penalty under the confidentiality provision of the PED policy, but it's definitely unconventional. And what happened to Scandrick apparently isn't all that unconventional. There are reports out there, even though he didn't mention the stimulant by name in his statement or in the statement that came from his agent, there are reports out there that Scandrick tested positive for MDMA, otherwise known as ecstasy, otherwise known as Molly, which has become a popular term in hip-hop circles in the past couple of years. I didn't know what it was until not that long ago. Now I know what it is. And I also know this. It really wasn't a positive test for Molly per se. The MDMA doesn't show up as a PED. What happens is these drugs get cut with other substances, very often amphetamines. That's what shows up on the screen for PEDs. It wouldn't have shown up if it were pure. And that's the problem. These guys, and I'm not saying that everyone who has tested positive for a banned stimulant this year was taking MDMA that wasn't pure, that had been mixed with amphetamines. But that is my understanding of what happened with Orlando Scandrick, that he intended to violate the substance abuse policy, and really it wouldn't have been a violation because the test was for PEDs. He wouldn't have been caught necessarily under the, and it was in April, the window for the annual substance abuse test doesn't even open until April 20. So that's not an issue. This was a PED test. They're not even testing for MDMA, marijuana, cocaine, anything else that doesn't fall under the PED policy. But amphetamines still do. And because of that, it was a positive. And because of that, one positive equals a four-game suspension. And that was the gist of his agent's statement. Ron Slavin put this in perspective, following up on something the NFL has been talking about, the idea that if and when there's HGH testing in place, there will be changes made to the PED policy, including the shifting of stimulants like amphetamines from the PED policy over to the substance abuse policy, especially in the offseason. What is amphetamines going to do for you in April? What's it really going to do? Is it going to help your game day performance? Does it stay in your system until September? No. It's one thing to test positive for it the weekend of a game. It's another thing to test positive for it when you're in the offseason, when you're on your own free time, when you're in Mexico, as Orlando Scandrick was. And if the NFL and the NFLPA could get together and come to an agreement on HGH testing, then guys like Orlando Scandrick wouldn't be losing nearly $1 million, wouldn't be suspended. And the PED policy would actually be catching cheaters, not guys who take a substance that, especially in the offseason, isn't doing anything to really help them. I mean, maybe you could say if they're studying their playbook in the offseason program, okay. But not the same thing as cheating along the lines of what will help you in a game in September, October, November, December, January, and if your team's really good, and the Cowboys aren't, early February. A team that did play into early February last year and has designs on playing into early February this year has an unexpected wrinkle involving a guy who held out of training camp but then showed up. He showed up in a different way on Monday. The report that Marshawn Lynch is being investigated for assault and personal property damage is all still very sketchy. It's all still very incomplete and unclear, but it's not a first offense for Marshawn Lynch. Whatever it was, it's not a first incident. The NFL is very aggressive about pursuing guys who have had past incidents, and Marshawn Lynch has had past incidents. And even if this thing goes away, the NFL, based on the zeal with which the NFL has pursued repeat offenders in the past, most likely will unleash its security detail, which kind of came off as the Keystone Cops in the Ray Rice situation, typically a little more organized and more efficient and more able to get to the truth, like it did with Ben Roethlisberger when his second incident in Milledgeville, Georgia 4 years ago didn't result in any type of arrest or prosecution, but did result in a six-game suspension that was reduced to four games. Why? Second incident. He'd been sued for sexual assault July of 2009, accused of sexual assault in early 2010. The NFL did its own investigation, came to its own conclusion that the suspension was warranted. That's what the NFL will do based on precedent. We heard so much about precedent with Ray Rice. The precedent is, when you've got repeat offenders, the NFL is far more concerned about making sure this isn't a mistake, a one-time thing. You get the benefit of the doubt once, as we saw with Ray Rice, even though he got a two-game suspension, most people think he really did get the benefit of the doubt, me included. You don't get the benefit of the doubt when you've had multiple incidents. So this is one to keep an eye on, because the other thing to remember, for the multiple offense, when you get into that repeat offender status, you can get suspended without the case being resolved through the court system, which means if the NFL gets to the point, in theory, by Labor Day, where it believes something happened, it believes that action is warranted, it believes, based on Marshawn Lynch's history, it's time for a suspension under the substance abuse, not substance abuse, but personal conduct policy. It can happen even if he's never arrested, even if he's never charged, and even if he is charged and it hasn't been resolved yet. So keep an eye on this one, because this could kind of pop up out of nowhere as a real problem for Marshawn Lynch because of the fact that he's created some problems for himself and for the NFL in the past. No problems in Cleveland at the top of the quarterback depth chart, but apparently problems at the bottom of the depth chart. Tyler Thigpen is out. Rex Grossman is in. My reaction, what took him so long? This was obvious the moment Kyle Shanahan became the offensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns. He had been taking Rex Grossman from city to city, town to town with him because Rex Grossman knows the offense. 1 year in Houston, several years in Washington. Back in 2011, the year that Grossman started 13 games for Washington, he said, look, Kyle Shanahan wants his offense run a certain way. He wants you to do everything the way he wants you to do it. I thought Grossman would have been a perfect guy to have there from the start of the offseason program to help teach the younger quarterbacks how to run Kyle Shanahan's offense. And now we have, how do we read into this? At first I thought, okay, they're going to wait till after June 1, because after June 1, a free agency signing doesn't count against that complicated and convoluted formula for compensatory draft picks. So June 1 comes and goes, and they don't sign Grossman. And I can get a little nervous, because I was on record on Cleveland radio saying, I guarantee you they're going to sign Rex Grossman. Thank God I didn't say by when, because I'd have said by now. So it's surprising that he becomes a member of the team today, August 12, when he could have been signed weeks ago. And it's confusing as to what the message is from this. Is this Rex Grossman is going to be the tutor for Johnny Football? Did they decide that they need somebody there to teach Johnny Football how to run that offense better? That they need a teammate to get through to him on how to run that offense in lieu of offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan? There has to be a reason for it. Maybe we'll get an explanation. Maybe it'll be the truth. As we often see in these settings, we don't always get the truth. But the truth is Rex Grossman, now a member of the team, very late in the process, relatively speaking. We'll see how long he stays. We'll see if he stays on the regular season roster and they carry three quarterbacks. But now Kyle Shanahan has someone there who knows his offense from experience and can help teach the offense to whoever ends up being the starting quarterback. And it's hard not to look at this as a sign that it's going to be Johnny Manziel, because I think it makes more sense to have Grossman there to teach Manziel than it does to have Grossman there to teach Brian Hoyer. But either way, that's the news of the day. And I didn't think we'd have Rex Grossman on the rundown for segment one, but maybe it's a little bit slow right now. It'll get faster in the week as the preseason continues and as the Jaguars get back on the field. And the Jaguars don't nearly get as much consideration as they deserve. So we're going to bring Mike Dempsey of 1010XL back on the program and try to make sense of this whole play with Blake Bortles. Is he really not going to start this year? Do they mean it when they say it? And we'll touch on other things Jaguars related with Dempsey, and then we'll touch on whatever you have to ask by way of Twitter and phone call, if anyone does call today. No one called yesterday, but we kind of rushed through it today. Hopefully you'll call. We'll do that to end the program. Before that, Mike Dempsey of 1010XL. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. That was from Friday night on Pro Football Talk on NBCSN. Mike Dempsey of 1010XL's Jaguars Today, providing a very effective and concise and informative report, not realizing that behind him a guy was mugging for the camera wearing a Mark Brunell jersey. And Mike Dempsey, not the guy in the Mark Brunell jersey, joins us now. Mike, are you filing this report with anyone in a Mark Brunell jersey in the vicinity?
I got to look behind me, and I'll let you know in a second. And in fact, I thought for a second that could have been Brunell. You know, these guys like to pack on a few pounds when they get done with their playing career, but it turned out just another Duval County superstar showing off his Brunell jersey and very proud of it.
Yeah, I haven't seen Brunell lately, but I doubt that he's up to that Scott Mitchell 366. And I kind of wish you would have seen the guy, because you're kind of a big, strong guy. I'd like to see you turn around and just shove that guy out of the way.
That's all good. Hey, you give me a heads up. You know, I didn't know. I was thinking in my head, does Florio have a thing with Brunell? Has he written something? What's going on? I was like, all right, I'll just roll with it. And next time I give you the heads up, I'll just reach back and I'll give him the big back of my hand.
Oh, that would have been great TV. It would have been YouTube views out the proverbial wazoo. But good stuff on Friday night. We appreciate you coming on the program then. We appreciate you coming on now. And I'd appreciate it if you could help me understand what in the world's going on with Blake Bortles and the Jaguars. Now, they benefit from the Manziel-Bridgewater distraction. But how is it that the Jaguars seem to be serious about keeping the third overall pick in the draft, Blake Bortles, on the bench when week one comes around?
Well, because, Mike, I don't think it's just a simple matter of is he better than Chad Henne. That's not the standard you want, is it? I mean, Chad Henne's been, an average on a good day quarterback in his NFL career. So, you know, Blake had a kind of a down practice yesterday, and I think you're going to see that with a rookie. We've seen him give us two great glimpses. We had a scrimmage here at the stadium a week ago, and then, of course, the first preseason game, he came in and played very well, had a couple of drops, could have been 9 for 11, well over 100 yards, and that's encouraging. And the arrow, you know, if you graph his practices going back to rookie minicamp, the arrow is pointing up, but he does have his inconsistencies, and they're still trying to work those out. Keep in mind, no pressure whatsoever from the Bucs D-line. He's playing against second-teamers out there. We'll get a better glimpse of him, and if he does that again against Chicago, I think he's going to force Gus Bradley to play him with the ones a little bit, possibly in week 3 in the preseason against Detroit.
But is this part of an effort by Gus Bradley to let Blake Bortles gather confidence by showing that he can work his way up the ladder, by earning it, by creating the impression that it hasn't been handed him? Because I think that's happened with other quarterbacks where there's a competition, and it's kind of rigged, and the whole goal is to make the quarterback, the young quarterback, feel better about himself.
Yeah, but this is not a rigged competition, certainly. And, yeah, they want him to feel good, and they want him to earn that spot. And why wouldn't you want him to earn that spot? But I think, look, they've got questions on the offensive line, Mike, and some of those got exploited in this first game. We knew that coming in. Wide receiver's been an issue. Can't keep these guys healthy. You got a lot of youth in the wide receiver core. You've got a lot of things that don't make for a perfect laboratory for a young quarterback to get his first starts early in his rookie season. So Chad Henne has carried the mantle of the starter all offseason, and he's played well. He's had a good offseason of practices. Now, question is, can he bring that to the game? But if Blake continues to put that distance between himself for each of the next 3 preseason games compared to Chad, I mean, I think the locker room will know. You know when the guy is the guy. He's just not quite there yet.
And that's what happened in Seattle a couple of years ago when Gus was still there as the defensive coordinator. Russell Wilson wasn't some dramatic choice by Pete Carroll who rolled out of bed one day and said, I'm going to go with the rookie. Everybody knew by then that Russell Wilson was the better quarterback. The players bought in. The players would have bought out if it hadn't been Russell Wilson as of week one. Maybe that just happens organically. But what if Chad Henne's the starter? And what if Chad Henne does well this year? What if the Jaguars in a weak AFC South end up in the postseason? Does Bortles possibly sit on the bench for another year if Chad Henne ends up having a great season?
I can't see that happening. And look, that would be a problem. First of all, what are the likelihood of Chad Henne having that kind of season and leading the Jags to the playoffs? I think the defense can keep them in a lot of football games, but, you know, they would love to have that problem. Wouldn't you? You'd rather have that. And ultimately, if they feel Blake Bortles is ready to play, I there's no question he's going to be starting at the beginning of next year. I don't think you'll find anyone in Jacksonville who covers this team that doesn't think he'll be starting at some point this year. It's only a question of when, not if.
How much of the patience with Bortles is a reflection of the security that Gus Bradley, the head coach, and Dave Caldwell, the GM, feel from above? Because with other teams, I feel like the attitude is, we better use this first-round quarterback now because we may not be here by the time the first-round quarterback is on the field. So we better use him or we're going to lose our jobs. Is there a sense that these guys have the luxury of saying, you know what, we can take our time on this. We don't have to rush Bortles because we don't feel like we're going to get rushed out the door if things don't work out this season?
Total security. I mean, there's not a hint, not a smidgen. Now, if they were to have a season like last year where they lost their first 8 games by double digits, I mean, if you're going to have something catastrophic, well, the heat can get turned up. But as of now, there's none. The typical Jaguar fan is not expecting a playoff run this year. They are expecting improvement. And even, Mike, they may lose 10 games this year, but it's how they lose them. Like I said, they had an historically bad first half of the season last year. You could argue it's the worst in NFL history with the margin of the beat that they were facing every week. So if they're competitive, and it's a one touchdown game or less, or single digits in 8 of those 10 losses, I think fans are going to see that as a building block and a step forward. Now, expectation, they start to come in 2015, but for right now, they've got the luxury of patience.
Yeah, and what really is the expectation this year for that team? Again, the AFC South is weak. The Colts seem to be firmly in command. But you just kind of get this idea that the Jaguars quietly improving, quietly reflecting Gus Bradley's personality, quietly getting better, and maybe sneaky can be competitive this year. Is that a fair assessment of where the Jaguars are?
Yeah, I think that is fair. And as it starts defensively, really. The front four, if they can get pressure with the front four. Now, the Bucs may have a really bad offensive line, but they were in that backfield all night in the first quarter and really all throughout the game. Twos on twos, threes on threes. You're bringing Chris Clemens and Red Bryant. They've got young guys that they drafted this year, like Telvin Smith and Chris Smith, showing up great speed, and they translated that to the first preseason game. We feel the defense is going to be pretty good, and if you're in games, like they were horrible last year, and they ended up winning four games in the second half of the season. So I think most people think, you know, 6-8 is reasonable because that defense is going to keep them in there every week. And if you make those couple of plays that turn the tide every week, you're going to have a chance to win your share.
What's going on with receiver Marquise Lee? The rookie fell into round two because he had a bad 2013 after winning the Biletnikoff Award as the best college receiver in the country in 2012. Starting lineup, arguably by default. Gus Bradley says some bad things about him, then backtrack says some good things about him. What overall is happening with Marquise Lee?
You know, he hasn't stood out as much on a per-play basis as Allen Robinson had. The same guy who was drafted, or the guy who was drafted in the same round as him out of Penn State, the rookie wide receiver. The problem for Robinson is he cannot stay healthy, or at least he hasn't been for an extended period of time, either in OTAs or in training camp. He's missed a ton of time with hamstring issues. Marquise at times has flashed that playmaking ability. It's more run after the catch that we've seen with him than anything on the practice field. And I think Gus was trying to send a message, but I think he realized he may have gone a step too far with it. He left the impression that Lee was dogging it. And if you go back and look, which I have, he played 16 snaps. It wasn't a case, I think, of so much, I'm going to jog here because the ball's not coming my way. I think it was uncertainty being a rookie. What do I do? This cornerback is playing me this far off the line. Am I supposed to be running this, you know, up to this point? And I don't think he's quite comfortable in that role yet. It's to be expected, but it's magnified because, like you said, almost by default, you're going to expect a big role from him right from the start.
Yeah, one of the reasons the expectation is there, Cecil Short's still out due to injury. When will he be back? When can we expect him to be 100%? Any concerns about injuries lingering into the regular season?
Of course there's concerns with this guy because he's had a variety of soft tissue injuries. He had the concussions. He was back in practice today. I don't know if he was 100% full participant. I was on the air for most of practice. It just wrapped up, but he's walking by me almost literally right now, carrying his kid after practice. So it was good to see him out there in pads. Toby Gerhardt back as well. I wouldn't expect Cecil Short to play this week, but barring any setbacks, I think he'll be a full go for week three of the preseason.
How about Toby Gerhardt, the running back who came over from Minnesota? There's an expectation that he could become a workhorse, bell cow, whatever cliche we want to use. He's missed some time due to injury. What's his status, and what do we expect reasonably from him this season?
Well, I mean, you know, I saw a report yesterday from some guys from SiriusXM who popped in for the day that, well, it's going to be more of a running back by committee. We've got no indication of that here, that Toby Gerhardt, if he's healthy, may not carry it 300 times, but they like his receiving ability out of the backfield. They talked about him as a three-down back. You know, he was a third-down back in Minnesota, so you know he can catch the football. You know he can pass protect. There's no situation where he has to come off the field. I think 300 touches combined between, say, 40 to 50 receptions out of the backfield, including 240 or so carries, I think is a reasonable expectation. The question is, will he hold up for that? Obviously, the hit pointers kept him out. As I said, he returned to practice today. I look for him to maybe get a series on Thursday night. They're not going to overdo it just coming back and then go from there. If he has no further setbacks like Cecil, you'll see him ready to go for week three of the preseason.
We're getting closer and closer to the commencement of the roster cutdowns. And for a lot of teams, there's always a guy that maybe the national media didn't see coming, but locally there was an inkling that that guy was in trouble. Anybody with the Jaguars that you're keeping an eye on that would be kind of a surprising move if he doesn't make the team?
I think you're from the larger perspective of across the country. I don't know if people are that in tune with this roster to begin with. But for me, I was talking with Jeff Lagerman today, former New York Jet Jaguar. He works on the team's broadcast. And he said he thinks this is not in stone, but Mike Brewster, who right now is running as the starting center, had some issues, snapped a couple balls over Henny's head in the first preseason game, thinks he may be a guy that if he doesn't make the team as the starter, may not make the team at all, because he really is only going to back up one position, and that's center. And you usually don't keep a guy who is that streamlined to that one spot, because we saw him play a guard. He really doesn't have the functional strength to play guard in the National Football League. Right now, he's going to get the start on Thursday night, but I think it's a big game for him, and the next few weeks are going to be big for him. So from that standpoint, if people know who Mike Brewster is, then I guess that would be a bit of a surprise. If he doesn't get the starting job, he may not be part of this football team.
Do the Jaguars ever expect Justin Blackmon to be reinstated?
Do you? Does anyone really? I mean, realistically, I'd say no. At this point, you certainly can't count on it, and I think that's why you saw them approach the draft the way they did with both Lee and Robinson in the second round this year. If you get him, it's a bonus, but it's got to be a completely unexpected bonus at this point in time. I mean, they've done everything to try to reach out to him, to give him support. They didn't ostracize him at all. And he's kind of gone off on his own. He's cut off communication, not only with the coaches, but his teammates. So at this point, you hope he's not, just a cautionary tale, because that's what he's shaping up to be. And, I don't know anybody that would put any kind of odds on maybe 1 in 100 that he'll ever suit up for the Jags again.
Why don't they cut him?
Well, because there is that 1 in 100, right? I mean, what's to be gained by cutting him, other than you don't have your name attached to him? When he pops up in a story, he says Jaguar wide receiver Justin Blackmon. It would be former Jaguar wide receiver. He's still talented. He's extremely talented. And, if he were to get his life straightened out, they have him under contract for several more years, because, when he's on suspension, that contract doesn't move. The clock kind of freezes on him. So they've got him, under team control. And look, if he came back and he got reinstated, even if they didn't want him, they figured maybe you can get a 6th or 7th round pick from some wide receiver hungry team out there. There's just really no direct benefit other than having your team's name not be associated with him anymore to let him go.
At one point, it was almost presumed that the Jaguars were destined to relocate out of Jacksonville. And at some juncture since Shad Khan bought the team, that just kind of evaporated. And the Jaguars no longer get mentioned as a team that may relocate. Is that a fair assessment, that there is no way the team is moving, that other than the annual game in London, those 7 other regular season home games are going to be played in Jacksonville, there's no way, no how, that that team is ever going to move?
I can't guarantee you that anything will never happen in any, if you give me 100 years, that, but there's zero talk about that, and really zero concern from anyone here in the city. The infrastructure that Shad Khan is helping to build around this game day experience, the money he's sinking into it, there's talks that he's going to try to develop a property that's very adjacent to the stadium, a former shipyard property, and turn it into a kind of an entertainment district. This is a guy, Mike, who went to Champaign, Illinois when he came and started up his company, and that's where he kept it. He's a guy, I think, who likes the idea of the American dream, and I think he sees this fan base as kind of part of that. Here's a team maybe that was on the brink at times of not having the most stability. Let's see what we can do with our marketing prowess and turn this into a destination once again. I'm telling you, if you were here in the late 90s, you never would have questioned that this franchise would ever be in trouble. So what was the thing that was going on then? They were winning. They were going to a couple of AFC championship games in 4 years. If the product on the field starts to catch up to the product off the field, I think that'll be a completely dead issue. I think it's mostly a dead issue nationally. Certainly locally, it hasn't been talked about for a while.
Well, it's good news, and you get the impression that big things are coming for the Jaguars. It's long overdue. It's been 7 years since a postseason appearance. And if Bortles works out, franchise quarterback for 10 years, 15 years, that means you're in contention each and every year, like they were when your good friend Mark Brunell was photobombing your spot on Friday night.
You know it, and it'll be a while before Blake puts on the pounds like that, we hope. But that's the hope, man. I mean, all this, you know, all this makes the most important thing in it. All these free agents, all the niceties of the stadium, man. The third overall pick, QB, you can't miss on this guy like the last GM missed on Blaine Gabbert. So right, early signs are encouraging, and that's all we can go on so far.
Well, great stuff. Thanks, as always. I owe you one now. I'll have to come on your show. That's kind of how we do the quid pro quo here. So give me a call sometime. I'll come on, and we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. Thanks again, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mike. Talk to you later.
All right, there he is, Mike Dempsey, 1010XL. Jaguars today. Came right over to do our show after wrapping up his. It's 10 to noon Eastern time on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Check it out if you're in Jacksonville. Check it out if it streams online, and probably does. Maybe I should listen to it once in a while. Maybe you should listen to us coming up, because we'll answer your questions if you send any questions in. We'll answer your questions if you call. You have to call first, though. I can't read your mind, although that would be a great superpower to have. I don't have to read minds to know the phone number. I've memorized it after 3.5 years. Has it been 3.5 years? It's been 3.5 years. 888-237-5269. Pick up your cell phone. Give us a call now. We'll be right back with your questions. This is PFT Live. PFT Planet Time, let's get to it like we always do. It's a Twitter question. First one today comes from at Pledger ESPN SA. Well, I'd prefer it to be an NBC Twitter handle, but either way, well, look, if someone from ESPN needs an answer to a question, they know where to get it from NBCSports.com's Pro Football Talk. The question from Pledger is, Grossman signing in Cleveland for quarterback with knowledge of Shanahan's system or possible Hoyer trade block? If so, Texans a possibility. You know what? I hadn't thought of that angle as I rambled on and on about the signing of Rex Grossman. Could it be that the Browns are considering trading Brian Hoyer? Could it be that that's the game here? Bring in Rex Grossman, who could back up Johnny Manziel, who knows that system very well if need be, and then Brian Hoyer gets moved to the Houston Texans, where there's familiarity, there's a past relationship with Bill O'Brien, the head coach of the Texans, the former Patriots offensive coordinator, and Brian Hoyer, who used to be Tom Brady's backup in New England. It's brilliant. It's probably unlikely, but I like the idea of maybe the Browns, if Manziel's the guy, and you don't want, if there truly is a 50-50 split but not yet a schism in the locker room, and you're going to make Manziel the starter, the best way to avoid the whole, hey, Brian Hoyer should play, the best way to avoid that is move Brian Hoyer and stockpile picks or get some other help, get a receiver, not Andre Johnson, but get some help, help your team get better. I kind of like it. Maybe that is what's going to happen. And if it is, I won't pretend it was my idea. We'll give credit to at Pledger. Although we may have to, if Pledger works for ESPN, maybe that's a good application to get Pledger here in the NBC family, because that's a good idea. I like that idea. Next, we're going to go to Andrew in Akron. Andrew, you're on PFT Live. What's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man.
So, who do you think's going to win the lacrosse championship this year?
Really? You know, I appreciate there are far worse things that Andrew could have said under the guise of asking a question about Johnny Manziel. So, yeah, moving right along. At E. O. Olson 8, who has the better year, Jordy Nelson or Randall Cobb? Both play receiver for the Green Bay Packers. If you didn't know, what are you doing watching this show? Although we welcome anybody, regardless of football knowledge or lack thereof. But Jordy Nelson signed his new contract. He's going to make almost $10 million a year under the extension. Randall Cobb tried to chase his new contract. He says he hasn't earned it yet. He may be a little hungrier than Jordy Nelson. Jordy Nelson's been banged up from time to time. So has Randall Cobb. The real question is, which of those two guys gets the double team on every play? If it's Jordy Nelson, maybe more opportunities for Randall Cobb. You throw in the contract year, more opportunities. Maybe he ends up having the better year. Right now, I'd say flip a coin between the two, given the reality that one of those guys is going to be doubled, and it's probably Jordy Nelson. Cobb had that broken knee, broken leg, whatever it was, missed a lot of time last year. But he's got every reason to step it up and fill the shoes of James Jones, who vacated Green Bay for Oakland. We'll see what happens with that. But how about a non-answer? I actually gut feeling I'm going to stick with Jordy Nelson because of his track record, but Randall Cobb, kind of a kind of a sneaky guess that maybe he could end up having the bigger year because of double teams of Nelson, because of that contract year that Cobb is trying to parlay into a big deal like the one Nelson got, either from the Packers or someone else. Back to the phone lines. Joe in Omaha. What's up, Joe?
Not a whole lot just at work, but I figured I'd call and ask about the recent Orlando Scandrick situation. What do the Cowboys do at this point, being as they already had a pretty terrible defense and now they're even thinner at the cornerback spot when they just got gashed by the Chargers in the preseason game last week? So I just kind of wanted your opinion on, you know, how that affects them and what they do going forward with the recent news.
Well, thank you for the call. And I guess at this point, you initially go next man up. That's what they did with Sean Lee when they lost their middle linebacker for the year. There was talk of maybe trying to lure Brian Urlacher out of retirement. I think there was more interest on the part of the Cowboys than they would let on. But this has been a weird position for the Cowboys the last couple of years because they moved to that 4-3 cover 2 defense, kind of wasted to have Brandon Carr and Morris Claiborne in there. I mean, the obvious reality, you look at the depth chart, although how binding is that at this point? But Scandrick ahead of Morris Claiborne. This is the opportunity for Claiborne to step up and show what he can do. When you go three wide, you need to have somebody to handle the nickel role. I think they just try to bump it up. I mean, there's no names that are jumping out on this depth chart as guys that can, become can't-miss talent for the Dallas Cowboys. But who's really out there? We heard Asante Samuel's name recently in connection with the New York Jets. They've opted to go younger. And that's the challenge. The closer you get to the regular season, the greater the temptation to trust the guys who have been in the system throughout the offseason, throughout training camp, throughout the preseason. And if there was anybody great out there, he's already been snatched up by another team. That's just the reality of this stage of the offseason when you've got 2,880 guys on NFL rosters. Most of the guys who can play already have jobs. All right, Twitter question from at C. Crawl. Do the Eagles snap back down to earth this season? They have to face the NFC West. Is 6-10 or around there possible? I'm going to delay my predictions for the 2014 regular season for as long as possible until Thursday, September 4th, sometime in the morning. I'll post them and we'll post everyone else's from PFT because so much can change. Injuries can affect things. I still think the Eagles are the best team in the NFC East. I think there's the Eagles and then there's a gap. And then maybe Washington and then there's a gap. And then maybe the Giants, and then possibly a big gap down to the Cowboys. But I think the Eagles in year two of the Chip Kelly experiment will be better. Some were alarmed by Nick Foles' pair of interceptions in the preseason opener, given that he only had two interceptions all of last season. That's an aberration. They're not concerned. We'll see what Nick Foles can do in the regular season. But keep in mind, this is his first year as the week one starter. Defensive coordinators have had the entire offseason to try to figure out, does he have any tells? Does he have any tendencies? What does he do well? What does he not do well? How can we take away the things that he does do well? More time to study than the past couple of years where he just kind of shows up out of nowhere, taking over in both years, ultimately, for Michael Vick. We'll see if Foles can keep it up. But even if he does, I think Chip Kelly, look, I was very skeptical about Chip Kelly a year ago. I'm convinced now after his first full season that he's made the adjustment to the NFL. He gets it. He understands it. He knows how to be successful. He knows how to make his team successful. And it helps to be in one of the worst divisions in the NFL. One more phone call. Let's go to Dave in St. Louis. Dave, you're on PFT Live. What's up, Dave?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, buddy.
I just calling in to see what your opinion on the on Sam Bradford and kind of the Rams in general this year, if you think they can be a playoff team or not.
Well, thank you for your call, Dave. And if they were in any other division, I'd say they got a chance to win the division or at least get themselves in a wild card position this year. This is the year where all of that potential has to turn into production. They've got so many young, talented players. Now is the time they've got to step up. And it really is a make-or-break year for Sam Bradford. Look, there's been chatter. Maybe they won't trade him. No one's going to trade for him, not with 2 years left on the last of the number one overall gigantic windfall contracts. They've paid this guy a ton of money. He was off to a great start last year, 14 touchdowns against 4 interceptions until he tore that ACL. He's got some young receivers who are ready to step up. Kenny Britt apparently resurrecting his career. Tavon Austin, when the game slows down for him, it's going to speed up, literally, and he's going to be hard to stop. Stedman Bailey has looked good so far in training camp. He's got that 4-game PED suspension. After he serves that, he'll be ready to go. Brian Quick, they've got a lot of hopes for him. Maybe this is the year the light goes on in his third NFL season. I think if the receivers can develop, if they can get a running game to complement it, that offense can be good. The defense, it's the fearsome foursome all over again when you look at what they have. And if Aaron Donald can develop right away and he'll benefit from all the attention that gets paid to Robert Quinn, yeah, the Rams can be very competitive. And I remember last year thinking, okay, maybe this is the year the Rams leapfrog either the 49ers or the Seahawks. And I wasn't able ultimately to pick one or the other that the Rams would jump, and I stuck with 49ers and Seahawks as playoff teams and ended up getting lucky for a change. This year, though, could you look at it and say, yeah, you know what, I think this is the year the Rams jump one of those two teams and jump back into the postseason, and they could be a dangerous team when they get there, because when you're young, like, you know, those young players that are finally finding their groove, you get a coach like Jeff Fisher, and maybe they don't get freaked out by the size of the stage as they get deeper and deeper into the postseason. It could be a very dangerous team this year if things fall together, but we'll see what happens. We are 16 days away from the start of the 2000. Is it 16? No, it's more than 16. 23. I keep saying 2 weeks and 2 days. I'm selling myself short here. It's 3 weeks and 2 days. 23 days until the start of the regular season. A lot to talk about until then. A lot of preseason games to play. A lot of stuff to do here. Check us out tonight, PFT on NBCSN, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Guest includes, tentatively, Peyton Manning doing his annual DirecTV tour. Hines Ward, former Super Bowl MVP. We got two Super Bowl MVPs on the show tonight. Peyton Manning, Hines Ward. And we'll see you then at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. See you back here again tomorrow at noon Eastern. Until then, check us out around the clock at ProFootballTalk.com. Have a great day.